the whole of the education system has been to get us left brain dominant. A left brain cannot experience love. It cannot experience joy. It cannot experience peace. And it cannot experience trust. The left brain could write a book about them, but it's never experienced them.
Hallo Herz, schön, dass du eingeschaltet hast. Ich bin Nadine Gerhardt und dieser Podcast ist mein absolutes Herzensprojekt, um dich zu inspirieren auf deinem ganz individuellen Weg zu mehr Fülle, Liebe und Lebensfreude. Hallo, du wunderschöner Mensch. Ich freue mich sehr, dass du zu Heiter bis Sonnig gefunden hast. Ich bin Nadine Gerhardt und heute gibt es eine ganz besondere Interviewfolge. Vorab nochmal vielen, vielen Dank für eure ganz neuen, so berührenden Worte in den Rezensionen. Sie treffen bei mir mitten ins Herz und ja, sie lassen mich noch einmal mehr spüren, dass genau das hier Teil meines Seelenplans ist. Und diese Unterstützung bedeutet mir wirklich sehr, sehr viel. Heute habe ich einen ganz besonderen Gast im Interview und als die Zusage kam, bin ich erstmal wie wild durchs Zimmer getanzt. Denn er ist einer dieser Menschen, die ganz uneigennützig den Bewusstwerdungsprozess der Menschheit auf diesem Wege unterstützen. Wir sprechen unter anderem über den Prozess des großen Erwachens der Menschheit. Wir sprechen über das noch vorherrschende Opferbewusstsein. Du erfährst von Michael, warum er seit vielen Jahren weder Angst, Sorgen, Stress noch Wut verspürt. Welche Auswirkungen in seinen Augen die Covid-Impfung hat. Wir sprechen über Selbstliebe, über Erfolg, über Vertrauen, über Hingabe, darüber, was Chaos für eine Bedeutung in unserem Leben hat und über noch so viel mehr. Michael Rhodes ist Bestseller-Autor, spiritueller Lehrer und ein erleuchteter Mann, der so von Liebe durchdrängt ist. Und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz viel Freude und viele neue Erkenntnisse mit diesem inspirierenden Interview. Michael, I'm so thankful to have this conversation with you. Thank you for taking the time to be with me, to help with the process of awakening and to help others become aware of awakening. To give some background, Michael is a spiritual enlightened teacher who lives in Australia together with his wonderful wife, Carolyn. He is 84 years old and at 49 he experienced a deep awakening. Since then, he has experienced the metaphysical world. And he has traveled the world every year teaching the spirituality of unconditional love and trust. He has written 23 books that have been translated into over 20 languages. Michael has a special gift for communicating with nature. I'm sure everyone has that ability, they just don't know it. For me, you are such an awakened person who speaks from the heart with such unconditional love and who reaches many people with this deep love. I could also feel that in every single email that I exchanged with your wife Carolyn beforehand. Do you consider yourself an awakened person? What makes you an awakened person or how do you see yourself in life?
Okay, well, it's an interesting new word, awakened, because they talk today of the Great Awakening. Mm. And for me, the Great Awakening is people who are waking up to the fact that I think to their love, to their compassion, maybe to their immortality, but also to the fact that the world is coming under global control, of which they don't want to be part. I think the awakening is about seeing life far more for what it is, rather than accepting the mainstream media's interpretation of what it is. Because we were brought up, whatever the media told us, was the way it was, way it is. And that's indoctrinated into us. But now there's an awakening that what they say is not necessarily the way it is at all. It's an agenda they would like us to believe. So on one level, that is also the Great Awakening. Now, what I went through all those years ago was what I call, very simply, self-realization or enlightenment, spiritual enlightenment. And to me, spiritual enlightenment is not just a Great Awakening. I mean, you could call it a great awakening, but it isn't just an awakening. Awakening is a shifting consciousness that is beginning to realize that we've lived in illusion for a long, long time. So enlightenment is when you, spiritual enlightenment is when you become completely, it is, says it beautifully, self-realization. You realize that there is an identity self, a personality with a body, and that there is a metaphysical self who is big capital S self, and that aspect of you is eternal. And it's like the end of, to me, you come out of kindergarten, you finish kindergarten. No more hair pulling and sticking fingers in eyes and calling names to each other. And then when you come out of kindergarten and you're spiritually enlightened, then if you're wise, you will realize it is time now to put yourself in junior school. And for me, I sat on the plateau of enlightened complacency for a couple of years. I realized there were a few other people sitting there and didn't like it at all. And so I came down to where folks were and put myself in the school. There's only 7 grades to the junior school. Senior school is not in this reality at all. And I consider I'm probably in, well, I'm pretty sure I'm in 5th grade at the moment. And whether I will reach 7th grade in this lifetime, I don't know, neither do I care. I like it where I am. So basically, as a spiritually enlightened person, I've forgotten what worry feels like. I've forgotten anxiety. I've forgotten stress. I've pretty much forgotten anger. I've forgotten reactions. I've forgotten fear and those sort of things. They just move out of your life. And so life becomes a beautiful experience. It's an experience where there was somebody once wrote a little quote, "Before I was enlightened, I chopped wood and carried water. After I was enlightened, I chopped wood and carried water." I don't think they were enlightened, because if they had have been, they would have written, "Before I was enlightened, I chopped wood and carried water. After I was enlightened, I chopped wood and carried water effortlessly." And that is the key. Everything becomes effortless. You don't try anymore. There's no should or shouldn't. There's no try. There's no act. You're completely at peace with yourself. And I could keep going and going. I'm that sort of person. But that probably encapsulates it. However, maybe this is in a question or not, but later there was an experience of unconditional love.
Many people talk about unconditional love, but they can't feel it. How can I really feel unconditional love?
That's like trying to describe a color to a blind person. But in 2000, for instance, I was surprised that I could be spiritually enlightened and still not know what unconditional love is. That I didn't expect that. I became aware of it, but that surprised me. But since then, I can realize that that's not uncommon at all. You can be spiritually enlightened and emotionally imbalanced and not really experience unconditional love. And yet you can have spiritual enlightenment. So we made spiritual enlightenment everything, but it isn't everything. It's just coming out of kindergarten. By the time you leave junior school, you should have complete emotional balance and unconditional love. So for me, when I was in in 2006, now that's quite a long time later. For spiritual enlightenment, there is no date. So I could say in 1986, and that would pin a linear date to it, but spiritual enlightenment takes place in the eternal moment. So it never leaves you. And if you're wise, it continues to grow. And you grow with it, you grow together. So if somebody says, "I was enlightened at a certain date," They probably weren't, but they thought they were. Because, you know, otherwise you leave it behind and it's always in the moment. So it's not about body or personality, even though they're affected. It's about the spiritual enlightenment belongs in the moment. So 2006, we're in America, and my late wife, Trini, suddenly had an aneurysm and was dead, just like that. And I only had two or three days. I knew that she was in a bit of a wobble, and suddenly in hospital and then dead, just like that. And so that put me in shock. And to keep this shortish, I had a lot of emails, and they all most of them talked about her first, because she was very loved and very popular. And then they talked to me about me. And I realized that a lot of people loved me out in the general community. And I realized in that moment that I really didn't love myself. And that shocked me completely. And so I had a year, because I communicate with nature, communicating with my late wife was easy. And so for the first year, and I wrote a book about this communication. So for the first year, there was a lot of communication between us. But at the beginning of that conversation, I was talking with Trini, my late wife, the personality. But gradually through the year, after about 6 months, it was not the personality. She was becoming more and more a beautiful being, but the personality wasn't there. And finally, I realized she had no interest in me talking about the things of my life. Her interest had lifted to a higher level. And finally, at the end, she said to me, "I need you to let go of me." And I realized I was still emotionally attached. And you need to realize that emotional attachment is not love. I mean, it's very, very sobering when you realize there's no... that 94% of humanity lives subconsciously, and there is no such thing as subconscious love. Think about that. And so that means probably the greater mass of the population has never truly experienced love. They've experienced what we call love. So what we do is we describe love as an emotion. But if you get in a car to drive home, do you become a car, or are you a passenger in the car? Exactly. You're the passenger. I'm glad you said that. Otherwise, I'd be rather worried. And so equally, when you feel your emotions lift toward loving someone, then these high emotions are the passengers of love. But they're not love, but they're the passengers, just as the lower emotions become the passengers of hate. And so, you know, emotions literally ride in vehicles, many, many different types. And so that's how I'd always seen love. And I considered I had a great love for Trini, which I did, as far as my human limits allowed me. And so when she said, "I need you to let go," I suddenly realized that our journey together was finished. And I thought I could be in my body and she'd be metaphysical and we could continue. And that's possible, but that wasn't part of her plan. And I realized that she was going on her journey without me. We would separate. And when you've been with somebody for over 50 years, married for 49 of them and with somebody, that was most of my life. And suddenly, you know, I met her at 18, and suddenly, most of my life was saying, "I need you to let me go." And I was completely shocked. But I won't go through the process, but I found within me the strength and the capacity to absolutely let go, completely let go. And in the moment I let go, I experienced this incredible, overwhelming, unconditional love. And it never left me. And I realized that that was the first act I'd ever done of unconditional love, because I wanted to hold on to her more than anything else in this world. But I didn't, I let go. And to me, that was something major. Explaining it, it doesn't sound like much. But I experienced unconditional love, and that was a great gift. I got. And there's many interesting because at the end of 2000 and during our travels of 2006, Trini, my late wife, always got, had been getting sick every year traveling. And I said, this is the last year we're going to do this. I'm not growing. I'm no longer growing. And as a spiritual teacher, if I can't grow, then I shouldn't be talking. You know, there's enough hypocrisy in the world without me adding to spiritual hypocrisy. But she died, and so she went through her transition. There is no death. And so so I went through a gigantic growth, and I looked back and realized that had she not moved on, transitioned out, following her journey, it wasn't a sacrifice. It was her journey, and given me that great gift, if I was prepared to take it, had the potential of unconditional love, that my time would have ended long ago. But since then, I've found that I can keep growing exponentially. And so enlightenment and love, I always put in one package, spiritual enlightenment and love. And they could be, but for me, they were not.
You said you can't feel pain. What about the world pain? Can you feel that?
When I became spiritual enlightenment, I felt the world pain. And one man remarked that he'd never seen anyone with sadder eyes than mine. And I knew exactly why, because I knew that I felt the world's sadness. And any time, if I wanted, I could just cry. I'm an emotional man. And I could have cried with the sadness. And I realized this doesn't work. And so I began to focus on the world's joy and the world's love. Now, love is such a higher and finer and vastly more powerful in energy than fear and pain and fatigue and all those. And so although there are not so many people with that as with pain and suffering, their energy reaches far higher. It flies where eagles fly, whereas pain flies where starlings fly. And there's no better or worse, but one works for you far better than the other. And so I changed my focus. So my answer would be, yes, I do feel the world's pain, and I do, but I don't give it much of my energy. So my focus is unconditional love. And if I'm focused on unconditional love, that's where my energy is. And where you focus, your energy flows and connects and creates. And so I connect with that. So that's always my message on Facebook and pretty well every interview I do. It is always in the end, because as I see it right now, the world is going through a crisis. And I truly believe that the human template is about to be broken. And I also believe that many, many people are going to leave their bodies. There is no death, but there'll be many people. And I suspect that the next 2 years are going to make the last 2 years look easy. And a lot of people seem to be completely unaware of it. And so there's nothing greater than love is the power of creation. And it's up to us. The more fear, the more we will create a fearful future. And the more love, the more we create a loving future. And on an individual level, if you're going with love, then your future is assured, because we move as individuals rather than a mass. But the mass, they're my family. And so I prefer that there's a big ascension toward love rather than a tiny one. And so if I have to live for the next 40 or 50 years to make that, keep that happening, well, then I'll do that.
Right.
I've never felt healthier in my life.
Wonderful. You said it a little bit. How do you currently see people and society? Why do you think we are going through this process in the world? What purpose does it serve us now?
Basically, collectively, we're here to learn creation. And so to learn creation, we create our own lives. Most people didn't pay attention in class for the last 200,000 years of incarnations. They didn't pay attention in class. They didn't realize that they are creating themselves. And that's all it's about. We're creating self. We're like, we started off millions of years ago with not even a blueprint, but we started off with consciousness. And we've been creating ourselves for millions of years. And recently we're on this planet, fairly recent adventure, on this planet to continue creating ourselves. So on this planet, we are the creative evolution of consciousness, and nature is the natural evolution of consciousness. And so it's a co-partnership. We're not in that partnership. We fell out long ago. We completely lost the direction we were going in. And we've done that already four times previously, four other 200,000-year cycles. So this is the fifth one, and we've done it again. But as I said, there'll be quite a percentage of people, I would like to think as many as 10%. Some spiritual teachers think 3%. I'd like to think 10, 12, 15% of people will move on. And as eternal beings, we just keep doing it. And so I feel one of the greatest purposes and the greatest way to create your life and to create harmony on the planet is by consciously choosing love.
Yes, great. The human collective is currently vibrating in a victim-perpetrator consciousness. How do you understand the relationship between victim and perpetrator?
We have humanity, I would say over 90% of humanity has slipped into victim consciousness, deeply into victim consciousness. And they all see life as out there. In truth, life is in here. And everything out there is part of the illusion that mind creates from its own perception of what it thinks is. So what we think is just part of a mass illusion. And so I feel that, to me, one of the reasons our template has to break, because victim consciousness does not work. And in nature, anything that doesn't work gets erased. Like, for instance, if we watch a video of animals, our empathy and sympathy always goes with the victim. So if a lion kills a kudu, poor kudu, or a gnu, poor gnu, whatever it kills, we never say, oh, yes, good, kill it, chew it up, bite it. And it's the same with everything like that. Killer whales, we always connect with the victim consciousness because we look through the eyes of our intellect, which has got it wrong, and we look through the eyes of victim consciousness. And so we're creating a world that supports being victims. Now we have what we call the cabals, the Illuminati. Now, if you have a world of victim consciousness, which I feel they've helped to create, there's no question about that. The whole of the education system has been to get us left brain dominant. And left brain cannot experience love. It cannot experience joy. It cannot experience peace. And it cannot experience trust. The left brain could write a book about them, that it's never experienced them. And so it's very good on aggression and anger and reaction and fear. And so I personally am convinced, and metaphysically looking at it shows a picture, we've been moved that way like a flock of sheep over thousands of years. But nevertheless, where you have a vast victim consciousness, you are going to create the victimizer. And so we have created a victimizer. The 1% victimizers are 99%. We need to stop blaming the 1% and getting angry and return to us, to self, and say, what do I choose? Do I choose to have fear or do I choose love? Now, subconsciously, we jump into fear. consciously, you would never choose fear. You would choose love. And so we, basically, humanity has forced itself into growing. And so we're at the point now of deep polarity, very, very deep polarity. We either grow and move on, or we stagnate and do the cycle again. And most will stagnate.
Michael, because of your experience, you are aware of the different levels of consciousness. Please tell us, what difference does it make whether a person shapes his life purely according to a social character, like the society, in order to meet certain requirements or to receive recognition? And how does it distinguish itself when the person is more and more aware of a spiritual body? And does he choose this way of life? How creative can a person then be? How much can a person thereby become the creator of his life? And how much can a person open up potential that he would not even dare to think without this perspective?
The thing is, this is a simple principle that applies to sentient beings, not just humans. In every moment of your life, you are creating the content and direction of every moment of your life. So you're either perpetuating more of the same, that's your creation, or if you are now in the awakening, you're beginning to look at your life and say, I think I've been doing this forever. And then you deliberately bring in change. But just the fact of growing in consciousness is like an organic way of bringing change into your life. And so you begin to change naturally and organically without looking at your life and saying, this is wrong, this is bad, this is not good enough, which are all judgments, and then creating change based on that, which will be more of the same in disguise. And so we have now no place to go except more of the same or change. There's nowhere else to go. Unfortunately, the great choice will be made by not choosing. And not choosing is more of the same. But those who make a choice, then they move into a different direction, because the program, the subconscious, the people locked on, doesn't make choices. It just follows the program, more of the same.
We live in a very scientifically oriented society, and today we talk a lot about awareness, awakening, enlightenment, which is hard to grasp for the human mind and also for the human eye. What advice do you give people who still cling to, I need to see proof?
Well, there, if it's got to be proven, there you have the left brain. And do you know what I've learned? There's timing. Flower buds unfold in timing, eggs hatch in timing, and humans grow in timing. And if a person is so left brain and they're so attached to their beliefs and prove it, I walk away. I'm not interested.
Okay. How do you perceive the influence of vaccination on the human body from your perspective?
Vaccination. Yes. Yeah. Years ago in Germany, I heard a woman say about the village in the valley. And I stood and laughed and laughed and laughed. That's when I first realized that you use W's instead of V's.
It could be.
No, it's okay. I think personally, my feelings about the vaccination is that it is a design to kill the immune system. I think it will kill the immune system. And because the COVID virus is going into species, because it's moving to other species, they found tigers with it. It'll soon be in our farm animals and our domestic animals. And every time it goes into one of them, it will mutate. And every vaccine will not be able to touch it because they will already be outdated. And I think the next 2 years, we're going to see absolute total breakdown of the whole medical system. It's doomed itself to collapse out of sheer greed and arrogance and the need to control.
Wow.
It is not a pretty picture that we're facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, there's a lot of selfishness going around, like you say. What means insanity for you?
Every world leader of all the governments on the planet, that's insanity. Mm. I mean, I've coined a word. There's not many sane people on the planet. There is a great mass of unsane people. That's my word. And there are far too many insane. That's how I see the population. I'll be honest, Nadine, I expected to see a pandemic of dementia. And I expected it around 2025. Because our dementia is going up and up rapidly. Now, there's a metaphysical reason for this. I don't care what science says. There is a science eventually will marry with meta-science, and then you're going to have something very wise and wonderful. But we're not there. But I, if you want me to go into it, I can. But there's a metaphysical reason for the incredible surge in dementia. And I expected it to be a pandemic. COVID came along and beat it. So COVID is a design to get rid of all the elderly. They've already designed a new COVID called COVID-25 to be released in 2025. That is aimed then at the middle age and youth to get rid of a lot of them, because the idea is bring it down to about 2 billion people. We're all dead wood. They don't want us. They want to be able to have a number they can control. And at the moment, we're uncontrollable. And so the situation we're in is not a good one. And still, I see the only way out is to choose love, be love, live love, think love, express love. Mm. And nothing, it's a soaring energy, and nothing can pull it down. And so with our interspecies, getting this COVID, then I think that the mutations are going to be fast, and there's no way they're going to be able to keep up with them. And all the people who've been vaccinated, it will be useless, because they will have killed their immune system. It will effectively destroy the immune system. I've read ever so much about this. And there's no question it's going to destroy the immune system. And so we've got some interesting times. And yet, does love ask for a vaccination, or does fear ask to be vaccinated? And there's a great separation taking place between fear and love, because in love, there is no fear. Fear is not the opposite of love. Love has no opposite, but love has opposition. And you know the opposition? Humanity. And yet we are love.
If someone gets angry with you or becomes abusive or takes advantage of you, steals money from you, how should you respond? I know the answer. Maybe you can talk about it.
It never happens to me.
No.
I mean, several core times I've gone into Bitcoin, and I've always used a trader to do it for me, and every time I've been scammed. So I've lost a few thousand of being scammed. And my feeling is that one of them was such a nice guy. You know, he played me beautifully. And my feeling, when I realized I'd been scammed about $12,000, my feeling was I felt so sad for him, because I realized he's chosen his direction, and it's not a direction I'd want to go. I felt really sad for it. And for me, 12,000, what's that? It's just money. You know, I'm not attached to money. I don't have a big bank account. I would not be classed anywhere near wealthy. But I know that the money I need is always there. Whatever I need is always there. That's my world. That's the world I live in. Because when you totally, unconditionally trust, you reshape reality around you to always meet your trust. And if everybody trusted, there would be no insurance companies. So insurance is based, I mean, seriously, it's based on fear, a lack of trust. And when they have like trust funds, none of them are trust funds. their fear comes. What would I say to do? I would say, let go and choose love.
In Germany, I often hear the belief that all is so difficult. It is not easy. What would you advise these people to do? Like, the people always say, oh, it's so hard, it's so difficult, it's not so easy, I can't do it.
That's what I call a pandemic of pathetic. A pandemic of helplessness, a pandemic of hopelessness. You know, I have a thing I call conscious conversations. I had so many people, I used to do counseling, and so many people would do that and they'd tell me all that stuff. And I gradually realized there is no such thing as a problem. There is no such thing as a human problem. They don't exist. All there is a lack of self-love. Nothing else exists, just a lack of self-love. And when you love yourself, all that is gone. When you unconditionally love yourself, when all your thoughts are supported, there's no attack thoughts, no judgment thoughts, no critical thoughts of yourself or anyone else, because everyone, there's only one humanity. And so if you criticize other people, you're criticizing yourself, because there's only one humanity. There's nothing outside self, nothing. You are it, you are the world, you are the universe. Now, to me, that is real. That, to me, is reality. But for most people, it's intellectual words, and they look at me and smile, yeah. And I realize they haven't a clue what I'm talking about. And that's okay, I accept that. They understand intellectually, but they don't know the experience.
They can't
and
feel
so, and so, yeah, I mean, that basically says it. You either become a whiner, as we call them in Australia, or you listen to yourself and say, how long have I been doing this? How many? I mean, when you have a humanity today, seldom does anybody have an original thought. That's scary. I mean, how many lifetimes do we have to recycle the same thoughts in different languages, with different words? I'm sure my last incarnation, I didn't Google, but so there's different languages, different words, but the same emotions and the same low state of mental energy. It has to end. And we don't have a future, there is none. So it might as well end now as leave in another 50 years when we all go down the gurgler in the worst way possible. So bring it on. Let's get into this. I'm happy with it. I'm sorry if I sound remarkably unsympathetic, but when you don't have fear, it's difficult to conjure it up.
Yeah. There's so many people who have fear. Here in the Western world or in Germany, there's a lot about you need to be successful. It's the most important thing. You need to be successful. I'm in Frankfurt, and in Frankfurt, it's all about money, and more and more and more. The energy, it's not that smooth energy that you feel. It's important sometimes to be there and bring in another energy. What's your advice for this?
There are two great illusions in most people's lives, success and failure. They are totally, utterly meaningless. Completely without meaning. I mean, you're successful if you've got a few million euros and you're hated by lots of people, your wife has left you and your children don't talk to you. That's successful. That's how insane it is. And yet, if you've got a wife who loves you, children are devoted to you, a circle of friends, and you make just enough money to live on each week, you're a failure. I mean, this is the insanity of the world today. We're crazy. I mean, there is a pandemic, and it's a pandemic of fear. And sitting right behind it, there is a ever-growing insanity on a global scale. We're a failed species. And that doesn't make us bad or wrong, because we'll be able to have another go at it and another go. We've got forever. We're eternal beings. There's no way out. Suicide, nothing takes us out of it. But at the moment, we're at the end of a cycle, and we're at the end of a agricultural city civilization cycle, and they always take the energy down, and this time it's done it in a spectacular way. And as a species, we've failed. That doesn't make us bad or wrong. But we're in exam times now. And exam times, we either awake, pass the exam, or we cling to more of the same, failed exam. It's not about right and wrong, good or bad, should or shouldn't. It's too different to, it's like the one stream of human consciousness that's been together for the last 200,000 years, about 100 years ago, began to move apart. Not separate, this is a paradox, but apart. And it's been, now it's moving further and further apart. And so one will recycle and one will move on into newness. And yet they remain as one human consciousness.
What do you think about drugs?
Drugs.
I know actually, my English.
It's okay. Actually, I never think about drugs. So if you ask me, well, I'm not on any prescription drugs, and I think drugs are mind-altering drugs. Generally speaking, I think Ram Dass, who took a lot of drugs in his life, Richard Alpert, and he did 2 or 3 weeks on LSD, and he said very clearly, he said, the higher you go with drugs, the further you come back down, and you're a little bit further back than when you started. So I feel that the drugs, for mind-altering drugs, I think cannabis is good because it is such a medicine and it should be available to everybody, medicinal cannabis. I think mind-altering drugs provide more disappointment than anything else. They can open the door to something that so many people are not ready for. They end up in a mental home. And prescription drugs is what I call, it's the third biggest death in America, and the third greatest death in America. And how we can have a humanity that is legal to kill people through prescription drugs and they queue up for them, that says to me that humanity, yes, is completely insane.
In this very intense awakening process, you let go of everything that was dear to you, like your family, God, your many beliefs, your desire to become enlightened, and finally yourself. You embarked on this deep process of letting go. What advice would you give to people who feel the desire to let go but do not know how to carry it out?
The first thing you need to do is let go of desire. There's an old saying, that which you desire the most shall enslave you in the end. And so desire is a good kick in the pants to get you moving. And then the first thing you do is put down desire. Because desire comes from the mind, and the mind is never going to be spiritually enlightened. And so it's, you know, I could write a book to answer that question. And so everything that you think you want, you don't need. And everything you need, you trust life will bring to you. And it happens. If I want to know something, I Google. If I need to know something, I focus on it and let go. And within 12 hours, I know everything that I needed to know. It's all there. Because there's only one human consciousness, and it's in that human consciousness. Most people, like you just had, we have questions. Questions come out of the left brain. The answer is always in the heart, because we're holistic beings. You can't have a heart without the whole. But people feel that life is out there, and out there is knowledge. And so they take it from them and put it out there into the illusion And knowledge comes from the illusion, so they keep themselves disempowered forever. Whereas I know that if you have a question, you have the answer, because you can't have a half of a whole, yeah. If you see what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you complete the sentence, please? From chaos arises?
Oh, well, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I have three main... I need to explain this because this comes out of my book, right? I need to explain this. There is a principle behind all growth. There's a dynamic behind all growth. You know, a plant doesn't just grow because it's programmed to grow or because its roots are getting nutrients. There's something beyond all that. So in my metaphysical travels, I have my mental and emotional bodies with me because they're metaphysical. Now, our emotion is our greatest power. Our emotions have its own language, which we're aware of. If I walk into a party and I've got a big smile on my face, a lot of people will see me and start smiling. If somebody's in a train and they start laughing, very soon everybody in that carriage is laughing. Because that is the language of emotions. If you're crying, you tend to cry alone. And so our emotions actually communicate very strongly. But we're not yet ready for an emotional language because we're emotionally imbalanced. Very few people, we control our emotions. We never balance them. This is why I teach emotional balance. Emotional control has never worked. You can't do that. Okay, so when I travel, I look at nature, and it's in humanity. It's in every cell of your body, Nadine, and in your being as a whole. And as I look at nature on a cellular level, there is an energy, and I see it as red, and I call that chaos with a capital C. Chaos, the engine that drives, and it drives growth. And then I see with it a black energy, and there are about 1,000 shades of the red energy. And everyone has a different emotional meaning, way beyond anything I can intellectually grasp. When I look at the black energy, I call that order, capital O, the stability of structure. And about 1,000 shades of black. So when everything has a degree of red chaos and black order. Now, if you have a wildfire, it's pretty well all chaos, the engine that drives. If you have a lump of granite, it's pretty well all order, the stability of structure, and it's going to be stable for a long, long time. So everything has to find a balance. So if I have this piece of here, and this hand is turning clockwise, and this is turning anti-clockwise, this begins to go tighter and tighter, and that's called torsion. And there's a certain point where it would break, but there's also a point where there's a complete balance between order and chaos. And there you get a flickering light, white all over it, called balance, the place of perfect, of the greatest potential. Right now in humanity, chaos is rising, and it's not a pretty one. Yet, that chaos is love-driven, because it is love that is bringing humanity to its knees to break the template that we're moving into, so we don't go into mass insanity, or no further than we already are, because there is mass insanity. You know, when two girls on the Grammys can bump and grind and hump each other, and that's okay, and yet Dr. Seuss, the children's book, is obscene, then you realize we're really losing the plot. We're going down somewhere that I don't want to go, and most people don't want to go. I mean, you know, it is so farcical. And so you begin to see, so this will stop the mass insanity. So it is love that is driving the chaos. And the chaos is not actually a malignant one. This is why the cabals won't win. They can't win, because love is now coming in and driving the chaos, which will destroy over the entire planet, the corruption, let's just call it the corruption, all over throughout humanity. And there will be a lot of bodies vacated, but no death. There was no death in the Second World War. Bodies were vacated, but we don't die. We're an immortal species. And so when we have headlines on the media, so many lives lost, 2,000 lives lost to COVID, it's rubbish. No lives have been lost. A lot of bodies have been left, but no lives are lost. We are not bodies. We are life in an eternal expression and growing all the time. And so chaos is doing a beautiful job for us, because we need help. And for about 50 years, the consciousness of humanity has been crying out, help, help, we need help. And so love is rising, and it's rising with a fist and a power. Like, you know, I love very much, I love humanity, because I love myself unconditionally. I can't do that without loving humanity. It doesn't mean I approve and love what they're doing, but the souls are courageous, even if ignorant souls, because this is a kindergarten planet for young souls, definitely a kindergarten planet. And, you know, this is why we're right out on the edge of the Milky Way. All the locals say, we don't want the kindergarten screaming and sending all bad energy. Put them out on the edge, so we can actually look up and see the Milky Way galaxy, of which we're a part. So, you know, put them a few light years out of our way. So they did that to protect the local real estate. And so, you know, what's happening here, it's like Jesus is reputed to have said, not a sparrow falls. Now, theologians have never understood that, because they're too clever, and clever invariably holds hands with stupid. And what it means, not a sparrow falls, it means nothing is out of place. Not a sparrow can fall out of place. In a flock of sheep, not one sheep is out of place. In every herd you see of animals, every animal is in its perfect place and juxtapositions everything else. Every human is in their perfect place. I see breathtaking perfection on this planet. It could be a different perfection, but it's one that we're having to go through. And so in that, you have to see the hand of God. You have to see, and my definition of God is nothing like it once was, but you have to see love is rising and shattering the old template. So out of the ashes, the phoenix of humanity can rise once again, fresh and new, and filled with a new energy of unconditional love.
If you could change the world, what would you want to change?
Nothing.
Great.
It's perfect. It's totally perfect the way it is. It's not pleasant the way it is. It's not comfortable. But for humanity right now, it's exactly what we need. It is so perfect, it takes my breath away. You see, the interesting thing is this. Here, you have chaos and order, and yet they're going in opposite directions and they oppose each other. But here's the paradox. Although they oppose each other, there is no opposition. And so, because out of it will become perfect balance. So I oppose the rising, I oppose the energies of what I would call evil. I oppose them because I'm part of the rising love, as many others do. But I have absolutely nothing of anger or aggression or hate or fear or anything like that. I oppose without opposition. Now, that might not make sense, but it does to me. Have you never seen an angry a peace march? But many of those people are very angry.
I know, yeah.
So my heart is all behind what they're intending, but their energy is angry. So many of them are obviously angry. You can't march for peace. You can only experience it. Mm-hmm. And when you experience it, you put it into the whole human consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
We could keep going on this for hours.
What is your advice for people who wants to experience? They can't feel it, but they want to experience it.
They have to make a choice. They have to choose to focus into the positive of life. They have to choose thoughts that uplift them. They have to keep away from fear, negative people. They have to keep away from social media and the general mass media. And they have to, inside themselves, make friends with themselves first. Because your relationship with yourself is your relationship with life, with God, with abundance, with health, with humanity. Your relationship with yourself. And most people, sadly, have a very poor relationship with themselves. They try to fix the world, never try to fix themselves. And donkeys years ago, I started a community because I wanted to change the world. And in that community, it took me a year to realize I couldn't change the world. What I needed to do was change me. And so I went through a 15-year process of change me, my own journey, and pain and suffering. I don't recommend it, but that was my path. And now I see the world as perfect. And it's very difficult to get angry and aggressive with something that is utterly beautiful. And so this movement that is happening, it's breathtakingly perfect. But I oppose it.
What is your most important message to the world?
Oh, that's easy. In every moment of your life, consciously, because you cannot do it subconsciously, consciously choose love. And no argument, choose love. No reaction, choose love. No, I'll get my own back, choose love. Choosing love is a power, an incredible power. And it brings you into an incredible compatibility with yourself. It takes enormous strength to walk away from an insult and just smile and say, you believe as you wish, while inside you just choose love. You just keep choosing love. And you will grow in the fastest way that consciousness can recreate you.
Such beautiful words. Thank you so much. You give life-changing intensive seminars, but this year you are not able to leave Australia, right?
No, it's lovely. I had the first year off in 30 years last night, but now this year I will be online. I start in the beginning of May in English, and it will go into German and whatever languages with subtitles it requires.
That's great. And you also give meditation once a month, I think, right?
The first Sunday in every month, I do a healing humanity meditation. And now there's several thousand people doing it, getting involved.
Oh, wow. Great. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it.
Touched with my German accent.
Thank you very much for inviting me on your show. I've enjoyed it and I've enjoyed you.
Thank you so much.
We love you. Thank you.
Ich bin so froh, dass wir dieses Interview geführt haben. Ich bin so dankbar für Michael und für Carolyn. Sie haben so viel Liebe in sich, die sie mit der ganzen Welt teilen, und das ist ein Riesengeschenk. Wenn dir diese Podcast-Folge gefallen hat, dann teile sie mit deinen Liebsten, und ja, damit sie das erfahren und erfahren, schreibe ich direkt groß ein Schlüsselwort. Ich werde alle Links zu Michael, all seine Bücher und seine Website, Facebook und so weiter, werde ich in den Shownotes verlinken. Du findest mich auf nadinegerhardt.com. Und ja, ich freue mich schon aufs nächste Mal, wenn es wieder heißt Heiter bis Sonic, eine neue Podcast-Folge. Und lass es dir gut gehen. Namaste und Satnam, deine Nadine.